SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I'm always stoked for Thursday afternoons because we go to the MGM National Harbor and the BetMGM Sportsbook and Lounge and hook up with my main man, Warren Sharp. You can follow him on social media at Sharp Football. You can see him across the board on Sports Grid. You can see him every Thursday right here at 4 o'clock Eastern for the entire hour on Coast to Coast. My man, Warren, good to see you. We got the Eagles and Texans tonight in H-Town. What do you think of this matchup?
I think it's going to be tough for Davis Mills. I really like the unders on Davis Mills passing yards. The Eagles don't give up very many passing yards to opposing quarterbacks anyways. One of the reasons is the Eagles' own offense is good. So the offense is going to stay out on the field. You know, I know we saw some big deep shots last week to A.J. Brown, and maybe we see another one. It's highly unlikely that they're going to be chucking the ball deep down the field and score three more deep shots to A.J. Brown. Thus, I think we're going to see a little bit more running from the Philadelphia Eagles, and it's going to slow down the tempo of this game, limit the possessions that the Texans have offensively. Davis Mills under his passing yards, I think it's a great prop, 219.5, 214.5, whatever your number is there. I really do think that this offense is going to struggle, particularly without Brandon Cooks out there, and Nico Collins, I believe, is out as well, so they might be down their top two wide receivers, and they're not a team that has a lot of depth at the receiver position to begin with. As a result, I think they're just going to struggle to move the football. A lot of reliance upon Damian Pierce as well on the ground, but I don't think it's going to be enough to get them close enough to this Philadelphia Eagles team, which has been an absolute juggernaut in the second quarter of games.
Well, they crushed the Steelers at the Link on Sunday. Do you expect them to blow out the Texans tonight, or do you think people have a shot if they grab that piece?
I don't see them winning this game. I think the Philadelphia Eagles will win. Now, I'm not going to be interested in laying that many points, which is why there's a great deal that MGM has. It's a one-game parlay that you can do, and there's a great option that they've got. You combine four legs, and if one of them loses, you get your money back up to $25. So I built one here that we can discuss really quickly. I like some of the legs on here. First of all, I will go Davis Mills under 219.5 passing yards. I think the Eagles first half, you can adjust that spread. So you could throw it down just below a field goal. You could say the Eagles are going to win this game, maybe just below a touchdown. And then you can add in there Damian Pierce over 54.5 rushing yards. That's going to pay over 3-1. And if one of those legs misses, you get your money back. So I think that's the way that I would look to play this game. I'm not going to lay the full 14 points on the Philadelphia Eagles, 13.5, 14 points. It's too rich. Even though they could get it accomplished, I don't want to be in that position late in this game.
How about look at Warren with the one-game parlay, styling with four legs. He's like a spider over there, giving everybody hits and winners, a way to make money. Risk-free, 25 buck, one-game parlay. Oh, my God, it's beautiful. We're going to be doing that every week. People are going to end up making a fortune. Is there any kind of feeling that the Eagles – on a short week, just want to go in there and handle their business and win the game? They don't care about blowing them out or putting up tons of numbers or trying to roast them deep with Brown. You think they're just going to do their normal thing, or you think they're just going to try to go through the motions and get the W?
Look, I don't know that they're going to go through the motions. The Philadelphia Eagles have one of the best organizations, and they've got one of the best coaching staffs out there. They're going to understand that the goal is to come in here and try to get up early in this game, establish a lead so that you're able to win the game easily in the second half. You don't have to scratch and claw your way through the second half against a team that has nothing to lose. The Houston Texans, obviously, absolutely nothing to lose here in this spot. So there's not going to be any style points that the Eagles need to get. Get in, get the job done, get as many points on the board early, and then ride out the second half. Try to get back home, enjoy this mini bye as quickly as possible to rest up down the stretch run for the football season. So I think it's a great opportunity, but I absolutely don't see this team as caring about national television and putting on a show. You know, this is a team with an undefeated record, they have bigger fish to fry, as they say in H-Town, than to try to deal with putting on style points to try to score points in the fourth quarter and blow out the Houston Texans, throwing up a crooked number on the scoreboard.
Why would the Texans not get rid of this malcontent Cooks? I mean, he hates playing there. He wanted to be traded. He begged him to be traded. And then when they didn't trade him, he slammed him again. Why would they want this headache and this distraction is what it's become? It's a nightmare. Why wouldn't they have just dealt him? I understand about the money in his contract, but I don't care about $18 million, and neither do NFL teams. They pay guys $18 million every day when they wake up for breakfast.
Either they started off late, and so they didn't get build up enough of a desire in the media, or this is a team that just didn't really care that he was going to be upset and didn't really care that he may not be showing up here. But, I mean, obviously, from his position, he should have been taking a more aggressive route earlier than, like, a day before the trade deadline. But obviously, it's not a great situation to find yourself in for either Cooks or this team to be in a situation like this and dealing with this during the course of the NFL season.
When we come back, we're going to have Warren break down his trade grades for the deadline deals. He's going to talk about the Hockenson deal, the Claypool deal. Of course, Claypool went to the Bears, Hockenson to the Vikings, the Chubb trade and the Chubb deal that he got in Miami, the Ridley trade, which will basically go into effect next year with that badass, and the Hines trade. We're talking to Warren Sharp on Coast to Coast.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, we're back on Coast to Coast. We're at the BetMGM Sportsbook and Lounge at the MGM National Harbor with the great Warren Sharp, our lead NFL analyst on Sports Grid, and all the deadline deals. Let's start with the Hockenson deal. And I got to tell you, just from my end, I don't understand this team at all. First of all, they're pathetic. Second of all, the only guy that does anything ever in their games is Hockenson. He's the only guy. I mean, he's literally the only guy that performs, I guess, Rob Brown, but he's concussed and misses every other game, two, three at a time. I mean, they have no – I guess Swift is okay, but Hockenson is the only guy that really gets in the end zone. So what do? They trade him so they can stockpile more bad picks. I don't understand it at all. I really don't.
Well, Hockenson was one of the best trades that I saw, at least based upon what this team's going to do this year. I don't know about the future. We can forget about that, like in terms of what they sent back. But in terms of what he's going to add, he really fills a hole that was missing for this Minnesota Vikings team, and specifically for Kirk Cousins. And the reason why is if you look at some of the efficiencies that Kirk has had since he came to Minnesota starting in 2018, he's loved to throw the ball to tight ends, and the efficiency has been strong. 2018 plus 0.32 EPA per attempt, 2019 plus 0.37, 2020 plus 0.37. So far this season, though, that was down to minus 0.11. The passes to tight ends have been really inefficient, and so they go out and they add a really strong tight end who's also a difference maker after the catch. Think about all the receivers in the NFL, Scott. Deebo Samuel, all the explosive guys that are out there. You know who leads the league in yards after the catch above expectation based upon player tracking data from Next Gen Stats? It's TJ Hockenson. He has the most yards after the catch above expectation in the entire NFL right now. So I think this is going to make a difference for this offense, for the Vikings offense, and for Kirk Cousins.
I mean, I like his game, and I actually like Freiermuth's game as well in Pittsburgh. Tight ends, they get the ball, they catch it, and they make big plays out of nothing. It happens all the time. I don't like the Claypool deal either, I have to tell you, because the Steelers, you know, they've always stockpiled receivers and had a great receiving system in Pittsburgh. Let's face facts. Now they have Johnson, they have Pickens, they have no more depth, they get rid of Claypool, they have Freiermuth. They don't throw the ball enough to him because Canada's offense is absolute dog shack, and you know it. So they get rid of a guy that can leap and get up in the air and make plays. And after the catch, he's explosive. And I thought last year they didn't use him because Ben was moving at about 1 mile an hour with those cement shoes on. Explain to me why they dealt him, and you gave a high grade to the Steelers for getting rid of him?
Yeah, look, he was not a difference maker for the Steelers, and for the Steelers to get something in return, which they can use on another wide receiver. The best team, you mentioned it, you alluded to it, Scott. The Steelers are actually, metric-wise, the best team at drafting wide receivers in the NFL since Kevin Colbert's been around. Now, I know Kevin Colbert's no longer with the team, and we'll see if that regresses a little bit here. But they've been great at identifying talent, and I think using that pick on either another wide receiver that might give you a different skill set. I just think Pickens delivers what Claypool can deliver and a little bit more. I really like Pickens. I'm high on Pickens. I'd rather see Pickens on the field more, get more targets down the field, and less of Chase Claypool. I do think he makes a little bit of sense for Chicago, but giving up a pick like that, I don't necessarily love it. We'll see how he ends up performing in Chicago.
What about the Chubb trade to Miami? I think it makes their defense sickening, and they gave him a big five-year deal around 120 mil.
So the great thing about having a quarterback on a rookie deal is an example like this. We have Tua. We're not paying him a lot. We can afford to bring on a guy like this and figure out the details so that we can get this guy in there. The Dolphins have big plans for this season. They want to make the playoffs. They want to do something in the postseason. But their defense was not able to get very much natural pressure. As a result, they had to blitz a lot in order to get pressure. I think without Chubb, they're still unable to do that. But with Chubb, now they can get a little bit more natural pressure, give defenses more to worry about, so they don't have to blitz all the time that they want to get pressure on the opposing quarterback. I think that's going to be a big factor. I think he is going to bring some upside to this team. You can argue as to whether or not he was or wasn't worth the money, but the reality is this. He's there now. He's going to help the team this season, and he's able to fit in there because they're paying very little money to Tua for the next couple of years.
Let's talk about Ridley. I don't really care that he bet on football. I know the league does, but now the league's swimming in billions in gambling money. How funny that turned out to be. The one guy that was vehemently against betting was Roger Goodell. More than any other sport, any other commissioner, he was so opposed to gambling, it's not even funny. Now he's swimming in the money and doing the backstroke in Ben Franklin's. But I think Ridley's a great receiver. And next year, he's not going to bet on football anymore. He's already got burned. So I think he's just going to go back to making catches. I think that's a good deal.
I think it is a good deal. The limitations of Jacksonville still, to me, remain with Trevor Lawrence. It's not the receiving core. I think they've got receivers. They keep adding different pieces. They spent a ton in free agency. The problem with a massive expenditure like they made in free agency this past season that hasn't delivered results on the field in terms of wins and losses is that next season, all those guys that they got from free agency last year, their salary caps are going to massively rise. And that's going to cause them to cut different other players. It's going to have to cause them to make difficult decisions. It tends not to go well year two after spending a lot in free agency. So I'm worried about that for the Jaguars' future. Ridley's a great player. I don't disagree with anything that you said. But he's only going to go as far as what Trevor Lawrence is able to deliver. And I've just been massively underwhelmed with what I've seen from Trevor Lawrence. Obviously, last season it was his rookie year. You make all the excuses in the world with Urban Meyer down there. You say he's got a coach now in Doug Peterson, who's a professional head coach who knows how to dial up good offense. He's going to have better success, and we're still not seeing it, specifically in some of those crunch time situations, those clutch situations where there's a got to have a throw. He's not able to deliver it. So we'll see. But I don't mind the trade for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but it's still not going to help the team enough unless Trevor makes that next step.
Yeah, and I can't say enough bad things about Lawrence. I mean, bottom line is he sucks. They said he was a generational pick. He was a franchise-changing quarterback, and he's been anything but. I mean, his pick on the one-yard line last week in London made me sick to my stomach. And then with a minute 43 left in the game, he gets the ball with enough time for God to run him down the field and score. And on the first play, he throws another pick out on the wide side. I'm like, you suck. You're awful. He really is. I can't take watching him anymore, let alone betting on a game that they're involved in. I don't think they do anything right at all. I think the Bills will utilize Hines way better than the Colts did. I'll be honest with you.
Well, I think they will. I'm worried about the Colts this week. You know, they're going into New England and they're down. They might be down Jonathan Taylor. He hasn't practiced for a second straight day. He clearly wasn't 100%. They deal Hines, so they're down him. I mean, I'm not the type of guy who says running backs make a massive difference, but when you have a quarterback who's got as little experience as Sam Ehlinger, and I know we're going to touch on this game later, being down your top two previous running backs is not ideal, and that's what the Colts might be here in New England. But I do agree with you. Buffalo is going to make better use out of him. They need that efficiency on the checkdowns to running backs. I don't want them to run the ball more. I just want them to utilize some of the upside that throwing the ball to a back gives you at times. And it's clear that their other backs didn't give that to you. It's wild to me, though. Obviously, they spent a higher draft pick on a running back, and we see how that goes. We warned them. Everybody has warned them. Don't waste high draft capital on backs. You might think he could be that one last piece that you need. You might think he's going to be a difference maker. Generally speaking, that pick is going to be better utilized on another position in the draft than a running back. And they're finding that out, having to go out and deal for Himes at the deadline here.
Listen, I thought he played really well in that game against Washington when he got around the outside and hightailed it into the corner of the end zone with the legs high stepping. He had it all going. And then obviously, ice cold Heineken got it done in that last drive. That pass to McLaurin was great, and then he ran it in himself. He outplayed that Ehlinger 5-1. If you ask me, it wasn't even close. The Colts are going down. They're going down fast. Their decision-making, from Irsay to Ballard to Frank Reich, they should all be fired. When we come back, we'll get into that Rams-Bucks game and so much more with the Sharp Man.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Or pray. This is a whole new jungle. This is The Lion's Share. Brought to you by BetMGM.
Yeah, what he said. The Lion's Share brought to you by BetMGM. And at the BetMGM Sportsbook and Lounge at the MGM National Harbor, it's Warren Sharp Thursdays. Everybody's doing it. They just won't admit it. Let's start with the Rams and Bucks at Raymond James. Two desperate football teams and two teams going downhill fast. I think the Rams are going nowhere. And I still think the Bucks have a shot in that crappy division they're in. Brady had better win this game, though, because if they lose another one, I think that might be out of their grasp as well.
Well, look, I do think the division's wide open, at least in the NFC South, for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. My concern is with their play calling and their execution. They don't have the talent to overcome these things. The problem is, on first down runs in the first half of games, outside the final 3 minutes, this team is averaging 2.9 yards per carry when they hand the ball off to their running backs, which ranks dead last in the NFL. And because these runs are so unsuccessful, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense have found themselves in the seventh most third and long situations in the entire NFL, third and long being anything with 7+ yards to go. On these third and long, Scott, they're averaging a 10% conversion rate. They've converted 5 of 50 into first downs. That not only is the worst conversion rate of third and longs in the NFL this season, it is the worst in the NFL since at least 2000, which is as far back as I was tracking with my data. So this team has struggled massively to convert these third and longs. So the goal needs to be figure out a way to get out of these third and long situations. The only way is to be more efficient on early downs, which is Byron Leftwich's prime duty here as the offense coordinator and play caller. They need to get better plays into Tom Brady to execute with the personnel, whoever it might be. You might be down a lineman. Your running back might not be very good. You might need to throw the ball to some wide receivers you're not as comfortable with. Figure it out so you avoid third and longs more frequently. When I look at this Rams team, might shock some people to learn, this team on all three downs, on all four quarters, has the worst pressure rate of any team in the NFL. Right now they're not getting after the quarterback. So boost for Tom Brady. The problem is Brady's faced a bunch of teams that struggle to get pressure, and he still hasn't been very good. I do give the advantage, though, this week to this Buccaneers team. The Rams just played their nemesis with extra time to prepare, and they just laid an egg. They got blown out once again by Kyle Shanahan. Now it's the Bucs who actually have extra time to prepare. Tom Brady and the crew last played on Thursday. They get extra time to rest and get ready for this game. They better have a better game plan here offensively, and if they do, I think they can take care of business at home.
And they, you know, got over the Brady divorce. That, I think, totally distracted him the last month. It's been a disaster for his life. He looks like a guy that's been going through the ringer. And now it's over. It's been decided. He's moved on. They said he was jumping around at practice today, had a pep in his step. He knows it's time to turn it around. And I also think how the mighty have fallen from that playoff game last year between these two, of where they are today and where they were then, is amazing. All right. Chargers and Falcons at the Benz in Atlanta with the first place Falcons in the South. Can you imagine?
It is wild to think that they are first place, but I want to start talking about the Chargers, and that's because they're probably down their top two receivers, because it looks like Keenan Allen is going to be out, and they're obviously definitely without Mike Williams. Now, keep in mind, Keenan Allen has had seven targets this entire season. So, yes, he's not going to play, most likely. It's not as if he's been there and all of a sudden he's not going to be there. They've been living without him for a while, but now you got to move everybody up the totem pole, so to speak, and this team is going to have to deal with a lack of receiving talent. Now, what is one of the best situations for an offense if you don't have as much wide receiver talent? Well, number one would be to go up against a team that stinks defending running back passes. Another thing might be to go up against a team that can't get pressure on your quarterback because he might have to hold onto the ball a little bit longer for his receivers that have less experience to get open. And finally, you want to be going up against a team that struggles to defend short routes from all players, because these guys aren't going to be targeted deep down the field anyways, and Joe Lombardi doesn't throw the ball deep down the field. Well, guess what? The Atlanta Falcons defense is dead last in the NFL defending running back passes. The Atlanta Falcons defense is dead last in the NFL on early downs at getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. And the Atlanta Falcons is dead last on early downs against passes thrown 1 to 10 air yards. So this is a perfect matchup, actually, for a Chargers team that's going up against a defense and doesn't have their top two wide receivers. This is great for the Chargers. That sounds awesome. But what also is awesome, in my opinion, is the matchup that the Falcons are going to get when their offense has the ball. This Chargers defense is historically bad against the run. They're allowing 6.1 yards per carry. That is the most any team allows to opposing running backs since at least 2000. The next closest was 5.75 yards per carry. The Chargers are allowing 6.1 right now. We'll see where it goes. They have a chance to improve themselves over the final eight games and not finish worse since 2000. But as of this day right now, they are dead last since 2000 in run defense yards per carry allowed. They're terrible yards before contact, they're second worst. Yards after contact, they're dead last. The Falcons might be getting Cordero Patterson back. I think that's going to increase the upside of the Falcons' run game. There's also two things, though, that I like about the Falcons' passing game here. Number one is that the Chargers rank second worst in the NFL in yards per target allowed to tight ends. That's going to create upside for Kyle Pitts when Mariota does target him. Secondly, think about this Chargers defense for a second, Scott. They build themselves to basically try to slow down the Kansas City Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs are a team in their own division. You're going to have to win and beat the Chiefs if you're going to have lofty aspirations of making it to the Super Bowl one day. But what do the Chiefs do? They're a high pass team and they throw the ball really short. What are the Falcons? They don't throw the ball really short. They throw the ball deep down the field, and they're a heavy run team. So the run game is going to give this Chargers defense trouble. And then the passing game of the Falcons, I think, will also give them trouble, because the Falcons have one of the highest rates of total passes that are thrown 10-plus yards down the field, these deeper shots that Atlanta likes to take. And the Chargers defense, while it's better against short passes, is bottom five defending passes thrown 10-plus yards down the field. I think both of these passing attacks are going to be efficient enough. I think the run game for the Falcons is going to move the ball productively enough. I see this game going over the total, even though Mike Williams and Keenan Allen most likely are not going to be there. I think both teams can do enough on the scoreboard.
My man has more skinny than anyone on earth about a football game. I have never heard anything so impressive in my entire life. That was kick ass. I mean, I'm drowning in that skinny. There was so much information there. That was just rock star status. All right, Vikings and Commanders at the Dump in Landover, and they've won three in a row with ice cold Heineken now in charge of the offense. He did it on the road at Indy on Sunday. That was impressive. And the Vikings found a way and covered up in mini, and they won five in a row.
What do we always talk about when we're trying to back a team that's going on the road? We want a team that's going to have some support from the run game so the quarterback doesn't have to do everything. And we want a team that's going to be able to protect their quarterback, keep him upright when he does pass the ball, reduce the pressure from the opposing team. I don't think Kirk Cousins and this Vikings team get either of those accomplished. Let's start with the pressure rate. The Vikings have gone up against teams since week three that are terrible at getting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. Look at this list. Detroit was 26, Saints 31, Bears 28, Dolphins 21, and Cardinals 22. Now you're going up against the Washington Commanders, who rank number two in pressure rate. It's going to be a massive shock to the system, the fact that Washington's going to be able to get pressure on Kirk Cousins, and he has tremendously huge splits when he is being pressured. He's terrible against pressure. He's great when he's not being pressured, particularly on the road, and that's going to make a big difference here. So you say, okay, they're going to have to get support from the run game. Well, guess what? Washington is one of the best defenses against the run this year. They're top five overall. Two aspects of the game that they're great against the run. Number one, yards before contact per rush attempt. Why this metric, I always cite it and it's so big, is because if you can limit a running back from getting going, if you can contact him early on after he gets the football, he's much less likely to break off a big chunk run and flip the field and change the game. Washington ranks number two in yards before contact per rush allowed. And they're number three defending 11 personnel rushing attempts, which is basically all the Minnesota Vikings do. And if you look at the list of defenses that the Minnesota Vikings have gone up against 11 personnel, every single team that they've played ranks 20th or worse in 11 personnel runs defending those, except for the Miami Dolphins. And in that one game against the Miami Dolphins, in the first 56 minutes, Dalvin Cook had 9 rushing attempts for 17 yards. And the Miami Dolphins ranked number 8 against 11 personnel runs. Washington ranks number 3. Eventually, Dalvin Cook broke off a 50-plus yard run that skews all of his statistics with like 3 minutes and 45 seconds left to go in that game. But that was a game that Miami was starting Skylar Thompson. They started Teddy. Teddy got KO'd after one snap. Skylar comes in, their third stringer, and Miami's right there in this game despite playing a third string quarterback. I think Washington has a great shot in this game. 3.5 points, too many. 3 points, too many. I think Washington's, this is a coin flip game. I might like Washington outright here.
What do you think of Seattle and Arizona in the desert?
I don't know, because I don't know what's going on with Cliff Kingsbury. These teams played in week 6, and Cliff Kingsbury, who was 60% pass on early downs in the first half of games on the season, decides to go 60% run. The runs stink. Kyler Murray was terrible when he was throwing the football. They had no efficiency. The only thing they were doing was converting these third and longs to move the ball down the field. I don't like Cliff. I don't like this offense. I don't like the fact that they might be down 3 starting offensive linemen yet again. Kyler's had terrible splits with and without pressure. I'm worried about all of that. And for those reasons, I'm leaning a little bit towards the Seattle Seahawks, but I've been riding Seattle week in and week out. I don't know if this is the week that I need to get off the train or not. I've done nothing with this game, but I'm worried about this Cardinals offense.
I got to tell you, I keep winning with them. I won against the Chargers. I said earlier on the show, I won again against the Giants. Seattle just keeps cashing tickets for us. We got a lot of games to hit. Warren is on a roll, unequaled by his peers.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Every single week, Warren Sharp goes off like nobody's business on Coast to Coast on SportsGrid TV. We're at the National Harbor Styling at the BetMGM Sportsbook with Warren. And let's rattle off the rest of these games and see what you think as we head down the home stretch here. We'll start with Miami, suddenly hot again, going to Soldier Field to take on the Bears. The Bears, though, I think they still have lost 4 of 5. The only good game they had was the game in Foxborough where they ran the ball down the Pat's throat and everybody thought it was going to be the other way around. And it was the first time I actually saw Fields, you know, connecting on some nice 20-yard ropes. I mean, it was the best game I think he's played.
It was, and they caught the Patriots by surprise to some extent, right? The Patriots, a bad defense philosophically, mechanically against quarterback runs, and obviously we saw Justin Fields and the Chicago Bears take advantage of that, and then trying to account for that, they overcompensated and left themselves up to some, you know, passing plays down the field. Obviously the Dolphins have seen this game plan. The Dolphins understand what's going to be coming down the pike, and we talked a little bit about, you know, the Dolphins and their ability to defend 11 personnel runs. Well, overall, this is a team that's really good in general at defending the run, and thus, I think some of the running back carries are going to be limited from an upside perspective for the Chicago Bears. Now, the Bears were probably hoping that we were going to see some of the weather that they were forecasting by like Monday, Tuesday. There's some reports that we were going to see rain in this game and we're going to see some higher winds. That stuff has since pretty much moved by, and we're not going to see the rain. It's supposed to be a clear, beautiful fall day in Chicago. The winds are going to be isolated to Saturday night into Sunday morning, and thus, this is open season for Tua and the Dolphins to be throwing the ball down the field a little bit more, and I think they're going to be able to take advantage of the fact that the Chicago Bears defense just got rid of their two best players at the trade deadline here in the prior couple of weeks. So I think from a mentality perspective, it's going to hurt this Chicago Bears defense. Now, I do think they're going to be game. They're playing hard. Justin Fields is still going to be performing well. I think he's going to be running around. I love the strategy that they're using right now with taking advantage of his legs. When you have a quarterback who's mobile, take advantage of that. We've talked about it often this season, Scott. Number one, best play in the NFL, the most efficient play, is when a quarterback drops back to pass and his first read is covered and he sees a run lane between two offensive linemen and he just aggressively takes that. That play is going to gain 9 yards per play on average. It's the most efficient play in football. Justin Fields is utilizing that a little bit more. Yeah, sure, design some runs, but also let him do that, encourage him to do that. I see a back and forth game here. Money has started to come in on the Chicago Bears. I'm not interested in playing a side here at all. I've been looking a little bit towards the over, but it's now at 45.5 and doesn't have quite as much value to me at this moment.
So the Bengals are taking on Carolina. They blew that game after that Hail Mary. Moore got the penalty. They missed the Pinero kick, and they lost in overtime, and they'll probably never, get over it. But the Bengals' performance in Cleveland was pathetic. They have got to turn it around. They've got to be able to live on without Chase. They look pathetic against the Browns.
Yeah, 37% of their passing attempts were behind the line of scrimmage. On average, it was down at their season-to-date average. It's only 26%. They're throwing the ball really short. Their A-dot is lower. Joe Burrow was pressured more frequently in that game as well. And this Carolina Panthers defense is playing aggressively. They are playing very motivated under Steve Wilks. I think this team is going to bring their A-game to Cincinnati. The question is, does this Cincinnati offense change enough and adapt enough, knowing, okay, Chase is out, what are we going to do? What we tried last week didn't work. We are on a short week because they played Monday night. How do we fix some of these things? I don't have confidence in that coaching staff to make the right adjustments offensively to solve everything here. And I know everybody's getting on DJ Moore last week for removing his helmet, but look, the kicker needs to make the extra point, even if it's 15 yards further back. Be serious. The kicker also needs to make the field goal in overtime, and they win that game. Also, we could blame the quarterback, P.J. Walker, for throwing an interception to end the first half. They were up by 3, throw a pick 6 in the final seconds of the first half, trail by 4 going into the second half. There's a lot of blame to go around besides just pinning it all on D.J. Moore, although that was a stupid decision that he made. I think Carolina, I know all the sharp money is against me here. I haven't bet this game, but everybody is lining up to bet the Cincinnati Bengals in a prime bounce back spot at home. Joe Burrow is going to redeem himself. Maybe all of that is true. I'll hold out. If I can get an 8, I might be looking at the Carolina Panthers here, or investing in the first half knowing how good Cincinnati's defense has been in the second half of games.
So do you think the Packers finally get right against the Lions at Ford Field? I mean, it's got to end sometime, doesn't it?
does, and Aaron Rodgers has had a lot of success historically playing in Ford Field. All these games tend to be higher scoring games in Ford Field, so all that's going for them. What's not going for them, obviously, is just the history, the play that they've made, the lack of talent that they have over the course of the field. They got Bakhtiari back last week, and Aaron Rodgers still was clueless as to what he should be doing with the football. The receivers weren't getting open. They were just relying entirely on the run. Now, I will argue, like, I was fortunate to hit that under. I was on the under. I told the guys on Sunday before the game, like, this is going to be the scariest. I know Halloween is on Monday. This is going to be the scariest thing you do between now and Monday is bet the under Bills versus Packers. But that's the side that ended up cashing. And the reason it cashed is because all the running that the Packers did late in that game, they had a lot of efficiency on the ground. They're going to need to try to support Aaron Rodgers. They're going to need to move the ball on the ground. But when it is time to convert on third down, this passing attack needs to show up. It better show up. It should be able to show up against the Detroit Lions defense. Also, by the way, why'd the Lions fire their DB's coach? You think the DB's coach is responsible for their secondary being bad and their defense overall? Fire the defense coordinator who's calling the plays. Fire the GM who's bringing in the players. Like, why blame it on the DB's coach? I think that was just a massive instance of scapegoating. I feel bad for that guy.
Well, I just think they're a pathetic organization, top to bottom. I mean, literally, and they always have been. Since I've been alive, I'm 57, they have sucked. I mean, they've had, like, they had one good year, and even then they sucked. They were terrible even when they were good. They've only been good once. So let's talk about the Colts and Ellinger going to Foxborough. Good luck to that kid there. I think the Colts are a disaster.
Well, and they fired their offensive coordinator, who, by the way, doesn't call the plays either. So, you know, obviously that's an instance of Frank Reich, you know, trying to save his job to some extent. I don't think anybody out there really thinks that this guy designed the offensive game plan and brought in a quote-unquote mobile quarterback to then not run with the football in the first half at all. He had zero rushing attempts in the first half. It made no sense. Washington, we talked about it. They're great at bringing pressure and they're great at stopping your running back. So why not try to use the legs of Sam Ellinger a little bit here? That's exactly what needs to happen in New England if this team has a chance. We don't know if Jonathan Taylor is going to play. You just lost Nyheim Hines. You better use Ellinger's feet a little bit here and have him run the football. We just saw Justin Fields have a lot of success against this Patriots defense. They're bad against running quarterbacks. We know that. This is not something novel that the Bears uncovered. They've been bad against every single running quarterback that they've faced for years now. Utilize Ellinger's legs a little bit, but I don't know if I have confidence that the Indianapolis Colts are going to do that. On the flip side, you know, Mac Jones is still trying to get settled. I didn't really love what they were doing offensively last week. I've got more questions than I have answers with betting this game. Either way, the total's been getting bet up by some very sharp money, I will say, and that's pushed it up to 41 at some points right now, but I'm not so sure I agree with, you know, seeing a lot of points being scored in this game, particularly if both teams, you know, you think the Patriots are going to want to win with margin here? They just want to get out of Dodge with a victory against an Indianapolis Colts team led by Sam Ellinger. And Belichick's always been great against young, inexperienced quarterbacks.
Is the best game going to be at Snoopy with the Bills and Jets this week?
No, it's not going to be the best game. I'm really worried about Zach Wilson. You know, I did a study on him earlier today. We posted a video up on Sports Grid. You can check my Twitter timeline or Sports Grid's to go track that video down. But actually, Zach Wilson, not only is he worse in time to throw this year than he was last year, his efficiency when he's holding onto the ball, 3.5 plus seconds or longer, the worst of any quarterback in the NFL since at least 2000. He's been terrible. You see all these clips getting posted. You watch the games. You see it happening out there. He's running around buying time, trying to elude this defender, that defender. Now a guy from the secondary is able to come up to him, and he's still trying to dodge him, and then he throws an incompletion. It looks marvelous. He's buying a lot of time. He has completed 4 out of 41 dropbacks he's completed passes on when he's holding onto the ball for 3.5 seconds or longer. I don't know what he's doing, because when he gets rid of the ball in less than 3 seconds, he's above average in completion rate and EPA per pass attempt. He's just holding onto the ball too long. That's a very dangerous strategy against this Bills defense that gets pressure at one of the best rates in the NFL without even sending blitzes. The Bills made some mistakes down the stretch in that game against the Green Bay Packers, didn't seal the deal. I think they'll have more success early on in this game against the New York Jets, even though they've got a very good defense. It's just a matter of how the end game scenario breaks down. I'm thinking there's going to be a few more points scored in the third and fourth quarter of this game than there were on Sunday night when they played the Green Bay Packers.
And they're getting Trey White back, it looks like. So they're only going to get better, that Buffalo team. And that's just all there is to it. The Raiders play in Jacksonville. I thought their performance in New Orleans was the worst performance of any team in the NFL this year, including teams that have been shut out like the Colts by the Jags, right? Or whatever it was. They smoked them 24-0, whatever it was. I thought the Raiders looked like, I mean, they were going through the motions. They couldn't even get over the 50-yard line until there was like a minute left in the game. It was embarrassing.
It was absolutely embarrassing. Now, the one caveat could be this team was dealing with some sickness, some illness in the locker room. A lot of guys on both sides of the ball were affected by it, and so maybe that limited some of the upside. I mean, if we're trying to be nice, we could try to blame it on that potentially. But everything about that performance was embarrassing in New Orleans last week. Now, interestingly, this team stayed out on the East Coast. They stayed down in Florida, did a little bit of kumbaya team bonding, that type of thing. Some teams end up responding to that. I dislike both teams here. Both teams have let us down on the season. Fortunately, I didn't bet futures on either one of them. Like, a lot of people wanted to back futures on the Raiders when they got Davante Adams, or, you know, the Jaguars when they hired Doug Peterson and brought in all these free agents. I steered clear of both of those bets, thankfully. Both of these teams stink and have disappointed us. I don't want to have anything to do with this game. I mean, I know that you could tease the Jacksonville Jaguars, move them past the seven. Teasers have struggled this year, so I'm not necessarily interested in doing that. The other option here is just to take the Jaguars, because I don't see the Raiders should be laying points here on the road, even if it's against the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I've done nothing with this game at all.
Tennessee and Kansas City, they're both 5-2. We saw Tennessee play the Bills early on in the season and get raked. What do you think is going to happen when they go to Arrowhead and face another good team?
It's the second good team that they've played this year, and they've played a lot of subpar competition. You think that this game plan would be very easy for the Chiefs to figure out, right? If Ryan Tannehill is up there, which we still don't know, if Ryan Tannehill is up there, you want him to try to pass the ball. You want him to try to plant on that ankle. If it's not Ryan Tannehill, you want to force Malik Willis to throw the ball because you're not going to try to stop him from running the ball. He threw for, what, 51 yards last week? I think it should be easy for Steve Spagnuolo and this Chiefs defense to figure out a way to slow this team down. But guess what? Every single week we seem to say, all you got to do is stop Derrick Henry, somebody do it. And teams are unable to do that, and the Titans keep keeping games close and winning games. Mike Vrabel has done a great job once again this season with a lack of talent.
Henry went over 2 Bills last week. We'll come back and wrap it up with the Ravens and Saints.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, Warren, I guess my first thought of this Ravens-Saints game is the news that Michael Thomas is shut down again for the rest of the season for the Saints. And he actually had a couple of really nice games early in the season, but he's injured again and done. And it just is getting so stale watching this guy never play.
Yes, you know, it's sad. This is the life of certain players' lead. Some guys are more injury-prone than others, and some guys aren't necessarily even injury-prone, but they just don't have a good history of being able to overcome some of the injuries that, you know, they're dealt with. It's tough. The New Orleans Saints, they're down Michael Thomas. Obviously, Chris Olave is the main guy that they have to rely on here. They're going up against a Baltimore Ravens team that improved through this trade deadline defensively. They increased the defensive strength that they bring to the table here because I think that they realized our offense isn't as potent as it needs to be to overcome our defense struggling too much. And if you look at that Ravens offense, you know, they just lost their own number one wide receiver for the rest of the season. So Rashad Bateman out for the rest of the year, announced earlier today. We don't even know yet if Mark Andrews is going to play. I'm not quite sure how you can bet money on this game unless you have a very good understanding as to what Mark Andrews is going to be doing here. I think this game is tough right now. I think the Ravens, I kind of lean towards the Ravens, but I'm pretty positive that the Saints are going to be the side that's going to take the money late in this game. wait and see what happens with Mark Andrews.
I mean, they got it done in Tampa. I thought they took over that game against the Bucs and handled their business finally instead of blowing a lead.
Yeah, but that was against the Bucs team that they were able to run the ball on in the second half, and the Bucs, for some reason, weren't able to stop them. I think the Saints' defense might be a little bit better at stopping the run. It has been a bugaboo for them this season, though. But if they know that the Ravens really can't pass the ball very efficiently down the field and have some weapons they can trust, they can really focus on stopping that run game.
Great stuff today, Warren. Fabulous, Skinny. Thanks for all the insight, and enjoy all the games tonight and on Sunday and Monday. We'll see you again next week. Fabulous work, my man.
Thank you.